evening to you. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time for another edition of Midwest Beat. February is Black History Month, and in respect to that, each and every February installment of this weekly program has been part of a month-long series. I've had guest co-hosts, live performers, and we're just having a great time marking the evolution of black music in America. Tonight, co-hosting with me, I've got Billy Foster. He's a respected pianist, composer, educator, producer, radio show host, you name it, this guy does it. He's the full Renaissance man. You'll be getting to hear his music and hear him speak. He's an instructor at Northwest Indiana University. We'll talk about a class that he's offering that you'll be interested in. And over the past 35 years or so, Mr. Foster has performed all across the country. He's got his own radio show, and tonight we're covering it all. From the ragtime days on up to fusion and beyond. So stay with us. Midwest Beat with Tom Lounges is made possible by Merivale's Broadway Glass and Customs, providing auto, commercial, and residential glass replacement for more than 15 years. 219-88-GLASS or BroadwayGlass.net. Good evening to you. I'm Tom Lounges. It's time for another edition of Midwest Beat. And all this month, as you know, we're saluting Black History Month, and we're tracing the evolution of black music in America. We've covered spirituals and gospels. We covered the blues from acoustic to electric. Well, tonight we are tackling jazz. We're taking it from the ragtime era through bebop and fusion and, well, beyond. I've got an expert with me today. He is an instructor at the University, Indiana University Northwest. He's a seasoned player. He's toured America. He's a performer, a producer, a radio show host in his own right. And we've got him joining us. It's Mr. Billy Foster. We're jamming at the house. That's Billy Foster and friends. And Billy Foster is with us live in the studio here for tonight's edition, Jazz. That's a broad subject.
It sure is, Tom. I'd like to thank you for having me on, by the way.
Well, this is great that you're here. I mean, you are recognized by all the jazz musicians in the area, and Jeffrey Brown over at Valpo University, who I have so much respect for. He said Billy's the go-to guy when you want to talk about the history of jazz. So
thank you. Thank you.
You have your own radio show as well.
I do.
In Gary.
88.7. Tuesday, Thursdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1.
And that's the Billy Foster Jazz Zone.
It is.
And I was listening to some of your archive shows, and I'll tell you, it's a good show. And this month, you had your wife on with you.
Right. We're doing jazz history all through the month of February. Mm-hmm.
Kindred spirits.
Yeah.
Great minds. All right. We've got a lot to cover. So where shall we start with the history of jazz? Now, jazz, of course, as I understand it, born in New Orleans, gave birth to words like cool. You know,
yeah.
Where else can you get words like cool and hip? Those are all jazz terms.
Right.
And we use them today.
Well, there's a lineage, and I like to start at the beginning, actually. And we have normally it takes a semester to cover what we're going to try to cover here in an hour. So we're going to be playing excerpts, and some things we'll just have to skip. But I'm going to try to see if I can make this make sense from beginning to end.
All right.
As you said, things began in New Orleans. Some people say elsewhere in there was jazz going on in other places, but New Orleans definitely has all the documentation. It had all kinds of different people. Jazz, of course, came from blues and spirituals and ragtime and European quadrilles and European forms. All those people were present there in New Orleans, and black people mixed all these things together.
Mm-hmm. And there was a variety of black cultures there, too. You got the Creoles, the Cajuns.
Exactly.
I mean, there was a whole melting pot of just the black cultures.
Exactly.
Along with everything else.
Exactly. Well, around the late 1800s, ragtime became a really popular music, pioneered basically by Scott Joplin and a few others. And it was a written piano music that featured a march-like left hand, but the right hand was very syncopated, mm-hmm. which is why they got the term ragtime, or ragged rhythm.
Okay.
Okay, and New Orleans had these marching bands. They had a lot of secret societies, and each one had a marching band, and they would play for funerals and different functions. Well, they started to rag the music also. The ragtime became so popular, and they caught on and started to rag. And pretty soon, it just loosened up until they started improvising also. Hmm. And this is how the music began. And improvisation, of course, is one of the key elements in jazz. More of that in jazz than any other music that I know. I always think that in some ways jazz is upside down, because when you go to a classical concert, the concept is you want to have it as close to the composer, what he thought, mm-hmm. even your tones and things. You know, there's people interpret it in different ways, but you want to be as close to what you think the composer.
Very structured.
Right. And the notes are the same every time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to a rock concert, they wanted to sound as close to the record as they can get it. They go to great extremes to make it sound as close to the record as they can get it. When you go to a jazz concert, if the guy's playing the same thing night two that he played night one, you don't want to, no point in going to hear him anymore.
Right.
You know, so the idea is like this immediate personal expression. And that's what you get out of jazz.
An in-the-moment situation.
It's an in-the-moment. It's like composing on the spot. You know, you're hanging by a thread the whole time. But at any rate, so there were guys, the early guys were like King Oliver and Jelly Roll Morton and of course, Louis Armstrong. I'd like to play something. Jazz wasn't first recorded until 1917. So from around 1900, when it actually came out, was created, up until 1917, there's no record that you can hear, you know, so... Mm-hmm. The recording that we're going to hear now is by King Oliver. It's Dippermouth Blues. It's after King Oliver went to Chicago. This was recorded in 1923. King Oliver went to Chicago and called Louis Armstrong up. The recording is poor, as those recordings were back in that day. But this type of jazz is called New Orleans jazz, and it uses what we call collective improvisation, in that everybody is improvising at the same time. It's just the clarinet has its part, you know, its register. The trombone has its register. The trumpet has its register. Banjo and drums and early on tuba, which was replaced by bass later. But this recording, as were a lot of them from Chicago, the early recordings were made in Richmond, Indiana at Gannett Studios.
So we have roots here too?
We do, and they just made that a historical marker.
Okay. All right, this is it. Some early ragtime. Some early ragtime there. That's some of the
first.
That's
early jazz.
Early jazz.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. I'm so newbie at this.
Well, ragtime was a written piano thing.
All right.
And so this is after things kind of loosened up. And that was collective improvisation. That's New Orleans jazz. A lot of the New Orleans guys, of course, moved up to Chicago, came up on the riverboats, and continued on there. Louis Armstrong, of course, is key in really all pop music because he kind of changed everything. He changed the feel of things. And as far as jazz goes, he was the first person to be able to sustain a solo with great interest. And so at the point of this recording that we're going to hear, which was around 27 or so, this became a key recording in that jazz never went back to a collective thing, really. It always became a soloist
okay.
art form. And this is Louis Armstrong with West End Blues. By this time, the recording methods had improved some, so this will be a better sounding recording.
All right.
What
Armstrong, and that's taking it back again to the 1920s. He was still quite a young man at that time.
Yeah, he was, as they say, born in 1900 on the 4th of July, he always claimed, but no one knew if that was actually so.
Right.
So he was around 28 when this was, 27, 28 when this one was recorded. And Lewis was responsible for changing the feel of the music, the swing of it, and even vocally he was influential. The vocalists started copying his phrases, and when he came onto the scene, everybody went Lewis's way.
Mm-hmm.
So
and
he
said he kind of kickstarted the solo soloists as well.
Right. It was collective improv before that, but the only other person who at the time probably could keep up with him would be Earl Hines, who was playing piano on that cut.
Mm-hmm.
Sidney Bechet was another person that was kind of advanced at that time. But Lewis was, let's say, as they say now, he was the man.
Okay.
Yeah. Big bands started around 1923, actually. Fletcher Henderson had the most successful big jazz band, and he and Don Redmond pioneered the way that you would arrange for a big band that everybody followed, I guess, up until now. We're going to hear something, of course. Duke Ellington is jazz's premier composer, premier almost everything. What he did was incredible with his life. Duke Ellington was born in 1899 and died in 74. So
he was quite the showman, too.
Yeah. He was always elegant.
Always.
He was always elegant. And since this is Black History Month, I can say this. He always gave the black community something that they could really be proud of and look up to. When other black people were forced to play maids and things like that in the films, he would never do that. He'd always be dressed in a tuxedo or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
the top hat.
And so it was quite something when Duke Ellington came to town. But we're going to hear an early recording by the Duke Ellington Orchestra. This one's called Daybreak Express. It's remarkable to me because they rode on trains a lot. And this recording kind of imitates a train. So let's hear Daybreak Express.
Thank you.
Duke Ellington, Daybreak Express. I'm Tom Lounges, and we are tracking the evolution of jazz music, starting from the New Orleans jazz days, pre-jazz, ragtime on up. My guest is Billy Foster. Billy is a producer. He's an educator. He teaches classes. He's a professional musician, recording artist. In fact, Billy, before we go any further with the history of jazz, if you're interested in learning more about jazz, more than we can cover in this short hour show, you have a history of jazz class that's going to be starting up again soon. Tell us
right,
about it.
March 2nd. Well, it's just what it says. It'll be the history of jazz class. It goes each Wednesday for 6 weeks from 5:30 to 7:30 at IUN, or Indiana University Northwest. And we start from the beginning and go in depth and go through a lot of different artists and what their contributions were all the way up until the present day.
I am so wanting to take this class. I have to double check my schedule. Make
okay.
sure I'm not, when I saw this and we were talking about it, I need to do this to get my own chops up to speed. So History of Jazz, you can find out more. Is it on your website as well, billyfoster.com?
It's not on my website, okay. But it's on IUN's website.
Which is iun.edu/adultedu. And we'll give that
There's
out again.
There's a phone number there, too, Tom.
Oh, 219-980-6964. And we'll give that information out again before the show ends. So if you're interested and you don't have any paper, be sure to grab some. Duke Ellington, early on stuff, Daybreak Express.
Yeah, I'd like to play something that's by Duke Ellington in the 60s just to see how that particular band evolved. We won't listen to the whole thing, but maybe a couple of 3 minutes of... Ad lib on Napalm. It's from the Far East Suite.
All right, here it is. We are listening to the history of jazz. We've got Billy Foster with us as Midwest Beat continues to salute the evolution of black music in America. Perhaps one of the most American of all musics is jazz. Born here in the Crescent City area. And we're featuring right now some music from Duke Ellington. And this is from the 60s. What's the title on this?
Ad Lib on Napalm. My fault. I queued up the wrong CD. This is 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. Tom Lounge is here as we are listening to the evolution of jazz. And speaking of jazz, I want to remind everyone that the 31st
Valparaiso University Jazz Fest is going to be taking place right around the corner, March 28th to April 2nd. It's a great series of shows. A lot of it is free. A lot of it is regional and local jazz players. We've got the Jazz Faculty Trio of VU, which is going to be out there. In fact, my guest is a former member of that. Billy, you've played a lot of the Jazz Fest at VU as a member of the faculty.
Right.
And what kind of turnout do you get on that?
Well, when I was involved, there's always a great turnout each year. We started it back in 86, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I played up until the 29th one, so I played 29 of them.
Wow.
And we would always have a good crowd.
You've had some of the big names.
It evolved over the years, yeah. Oh, boy. James Moody, Jimmy Heath, Art Farmer, Red Rodney, Ernie Watts.
Ramsey Lewis.
Yeah, we've had Ramsey Lewis there.
Wow.
Just a number of people.
And that's happening again, the 31st VU Jazz Fest. Jeffrey Brown puts all that together with his team, and it's March 28th through April 2nd. And don't forget to attend that to get all your information at the VU website. We are picking up now. We just heard some back-to-back Duke Ellington, and we are now in the, well, that was the 60s.
Yeah, that was the 60s.
So we're going to jump back a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to jump back to where we were.
Okay.
We were around 1928, 29, listening to some early Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong. And so, as I was saying, big bands actually started in the mid-20s. But what's known as the big band era actually didn't start till about 35. The swing period is called, and it featured most big bands. There were hundreds of big bands touring the country at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made popular by Benny Goodman's band. And we're going to hear a little bit of Benny Goodman's band. Benny Goodman was a clarinetist.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to hear King Porter Stomp, which was actually written by Jelly Roll Morton.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a name.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to that.
All right. Jelly Roll Morton.
Right.
And
one
Benny
of the
Goodman.
New Orleans pioneers.
Performing. You can hear the New Orleans sound right there.
Yeah.
Wow. Tasty.
So Benny Goodman was like the Beatles are or were, you know, mm-hmm. now. Or Beyonce. He was the Beyonce of his
of his era. He was King Bee.
But you had bands like Artie Shaw and Tommy Dorsey and Glenn Miller and just hundreds of those bands touring the States.
When did Cab Calloway come around?
Back in Duke Ellington's era, one of the things that made Duke Ellington really popular was between 1927 or 28 and 1930 or 31. He had a gig, so to speak, at the Cotton Club. And out of the Cotton Club, there was a wire, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a national broadcast. And this is what made Duke Ellington really popular. Well, when Duke Ellington decided he wanted to go out on the road, then Cab took his spot around 1931 or so.
He was the replacement act.
Yeah, he was the replacement act for the Ellington Band. Of course, he had an excellent band himself.
Yeah, another showman.
Yeah, so that's Cab's thing.
He kind of took Duke's sophistication to a different level.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Well, during the time of the bands traveling, Kansas City had a scene. Around the Kansas City area in Oklahoma, there were a lot of bands they called territory bands, like the Blue Devils and that was Walter Page's band. But Count Basie had a band that was there, and when they decided to go to New York, the swings, it felt a little different the way that their thing was. Mm-hmm. So when Basie went to New York, he had a drummer named Joe Jones, who the whole feel of the swing thing changed when Basie went to New York, because Joe Jones, prior to him, guys would keep the time on the bass drum. So I don't know if you remember Gene Krupa, who was...
Out of Cal City.
Yeah, well, okay, that's right, he was. who was the premier drummer at the time? Well, he kept four beats. You'd always hear this bass drum going like that. Well, Joe Jones didn't do that. He put the time up on the hi-hat, which made the sound much smoother. And this is a cut. We'll play part of a cut from the Basie band, Jumping at the Woodside.
Of jazz in America as we continue to salute Black History Month here at Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. My guest is Billy Foster. He is himself a professional musician, an educator, a radio host, a producer, a songwriter, and, well, he's got it all down here, and including a great catalog of music that you've brought in tonight. Billy, where are we going from here? That was Basie.
That was the swing period, Basie and Goodman and all those guys, the big band guys. Well, now we come to the bebop period, which was
my favorite.
You said you came in at Charlie Parker.
Yep.
Well, Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and a lot of people say Thelonious Monk were experimenting with a new kind of jazz, which was much more complicated. And also those guys wanted to play more, so this became a small band music. With the big bands, you had arrangers and maybe a guy could take a solo once or twice a night. But these guys wanted to show what they could do, or they were more interested in, and they advanced the music harmonically and rhythmically. And
were these more quartets and sextets?
Quintets, sextets, quartets, you know. And so the harmonies became a lot trickier, like. So they used a lot of substitute harmonies and different kinds of scales and blue notes and... Mm-hmm. All kinds of other stuff that made a change in the music. One of the things that happened was during that period of time when the music, they would go up to these clubs and spend the night, like Minton's and Small's up in Harlem. And one of the things that happened was there was a record band on when this music was developing. Mm-hmm. And so when the record band came off, it was a full-blown music, and it came out as a shock to everybody, and everybody couldn't really get with it. But let's hear Charlie Parker. This is called Coco. Thank you.
Bird. That is Charlie Parker, and that guy was actually my introduction to jazz music back when I was just right out of high school, I think it was, driving home from Chicago from something or other, and I'm searching through the dial, and I heard this music coming out of the speakers, and I didn't know what it was. It was like something from another planet, and I fell in love with it. Found out, finally, they kept calling him the bird. No one ever said his name, which was frustrating for a guy that had no idea what he was listening to. Discovered it. Of course, everyone knows Charlie Parker, the Bird, now because Clint Eastwood did an amazing movie on his life. And if you haven't, if you want to know more about him, that's a good place to start. That movie is pretty detailed.
Yeah, there's some pretty good documentaries out on Charlie Parker also. There's a good one out on Thelonious Monk. And, well, there's several good documentaries out these days on some of the early jazz musicians. But nobody was a technician like that or could come up with the ideas that he was, describing him from another planet might not be, too far from.
Right.
But here's something by Dizzy Gillespie. This was his co-conspirator in the bebop movement, who's Dizzy, of course, is a trumpet player, Charlie Parker, the alto saxophone. We're going to hear Hot House.
As we continue to explore jazz, we are in the bebop era. We heard Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie. We'll be hearing some Miles in a few minutes, but we're not done with Dizzy yet, are we?
Well, I just want to speak a little bit about him. Those guys set the bar pretty high for everybody that came after. They were excellent players and musically, couldn't be touched. The other thing about Dizzy Gillespie, we're going to have to skip this, but I want to explain it anyway. Dizzy Gillespie's had a big band after that, a bebop big band, and he was responsible for, was responsible for bringing Latin music and jazz
Afro-Cuban
together.
Stuff?
Yeah, he brought the conga player Chano Pozo over. And the cut that I was going to play was the Manteca, but we should skip that if we're going to hear anything else.
Okay.
But I did want to mention that because that's important. So we're going to go to Miles Davis. Miles Davis played in Charlie Parker's band for several years. He came out of it wasn't East St. Alton, Illinois is where he came from. he came to New York to go to Juilliard, but spent all his time hunting around for Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. So I don't think he accomplished a lot at Juilliard. But at any rate,
now they say that Miles is one of the most influential. If you had to pick one single jazz guy, would you agree with that?
Yeah, because he changed the music several times, and this would be the first time he introduced something called the Cool School. It kind of took a lot of the blues and kind of, for lack of a better word, frantic playing out of it. Well, let's hear a little bit of Boblicity, and this is called Cool Jazz.
Okay. Davis, and again, a guy that has pioneered different sounds, different styles. He, like David Bowie of rock, being a rock chameleon, Miles was probably the biggest chameleon in the jazz scene.
Yeah, he was responsible for several different kinds of jazz, that being one of them, the Cool School, which became very, very popular on the West Coast, and guys continued on. One thing about jazz, once one kind starts, then it continues in parallel with, you know, it doesn't stop. It just
now that's when like the beatniks got into it, when he was doing the cool jazz stuff.
They weren't
into the big band and the stuff before. No. Miles kind of pioneered that whole hipster generation.
Oh, well, Miles was hip.
I think they coined that term around him.
But at any rate, the next thing he signaled a kind of jazz called hard bop. And hard bop brought the blues back in the music, and it felt more earthy. Let's listen to a little bit of Walkin'. This was recorded, I think, in 54. Blakey was kind of the real prototype for hard bop, and we're going to hear something by Art Blakey now. This is Moaning. Thank you.
The evolution of jazz, one of the most American of musics, is our topic tonight. Billy Foster with us. He is himself a performer, a producer, songwriter, educator, and a radio host. And we're cutting it pretty close here. We're keeping it going. Now, remember, if you want more on jazz history, 100 years of it, a multi-week course at Indiana University Northwest, March 2nd through April 13th. Billy, you are the instructor.
I am.
And it looks like from the pictures, I'm saying you use audiovisual and
right. We use we have videos of performers, and we use CDs.
Do you play in class yourself?
Some.
Okay, it's like a little mini concert then.
Yeah, right.
All right. Get details on that at iun.edu/adult. EdU, and you can also call them at 219-980-6964. And again, that's for the History of Jazz class. It's Wednesday evenings, 5:30 to 7:30, with my guest, Billy Foster. Where are we going to pick up at this point?
Well, we're going to go to Miles and So What. This cut comes off of the best-selling jazz album of all time called Kinda Blue.
Kinda Blue.
Yeah, and this signaled modal jazz. This is something else, Miles, Miles thing. Modal means that most jazz tunes have a lot of chords going through them, but if something is modal, you just have maybe a couple of chords, and you play on those one chords for a long time, and then it might change to another chord. But it doesn't have a series of chords, one right behind the other. And you use modes to play over these. That's like scales. So let's listen to So What.
Davis, best-selling album of all time in jazz?
Kinda Blue.
Kinda Blue.
Yeah, good. So that was one of Miles' great groups, the Sextet, with Cannonball Adderley, John Coltrane, Jimmy Cobb, Paul Chambers, and Bill Evans at the piano. Now, he had he had three great groups, but the next great Miles group featured Herbie Hancock at the piano, Tony Williams on drums. He was only 17 at the time. Mm-hmm. Ryan Carter on bass, and in this instance, George Coleman on tenor, playing the same tune, but listen to the difference. This was this was recorded in 64. The other one was in 59. Thank you.
Miles Davis once again, covering the same song we just heard, and that featuring Herbie Hancock, who is a Chicago native.
Right.
One of our own. And, of course, there with Miles, he went on to form the fusion stuff with
the Headhunters.
And, yeah, some great stuff, which sadly we're not going to get to play any music from at this point. But, Billy, we've got to have you back, and we're just going to do a whole series of the fusion era and beyond.
I'd be happy to come
back. Just ran real tight on time here, trying to fit 100 years of jazz in. All right, join us next week. We'll have Motown to Funk with Cheryl Youngblood and Say Yes. And then coming up to close things out, I'll be having the daughters of R&B, the daughters of Sam Cooke and Diana Ross. And we're just going to have a lot of fun with all that. So join us.